What does the March Department of Works and Pensions release of poverty statistics tell us, and why is it important?
To recent reports like the Joseph Rowntree Foundation's UK Poverty Report of 2024, offer any credible solutions to enduring and sometimes increasing poverty?
And where can LED and placemaking policy and practice make a real difference?
Warm welcome to our third Espresso Shot of April 2024, where we return our attention to one of our regular preoccupations here on LED Confidential, the enduring inequalities that impact in place and people terms across all of our regions, cities and towns, and what, if anything, we ought to be doing about it. David, there was a lot of press last month about particularly the latest figures on child poverty. Can you tell us a little bit more about the detail of those and what's lurking behind the headlines there?
It is interesting because the Department of Work and Pensions does publish these sort of household income collections of statistics, I think on an annual basis. They certainly produced time series going back to, I think it was 1995, in the case of some of the stats, and some of them are about individuals, some about households, some about pensioners, some about children. And I suppose the overall picture in the medium to long term is that, you know, post the global financial crisis in the late noughties, is sort of the impact of the sort of 2010 to 2012 austerity and then the shocks at the beginning of this decade means there's been little progress, if any, in mean and median household incomes over the post-global financial crisis period. And income inequality seems to be increasing. Certainly in almost every target group, it's not improving. So we got to the stage where over 14 million individuals are designated as being in relative poverty, of which 4 million of those are children. And those figures are up around 1,700,000 respectively over the post-global financial crisis period. And I suppose one of the things that we need to reflect on about this, so this is despite these being periods of really high and increasing employment participation. Average earnings grew in every year, and GDP grew in all but the 2020-21 peak lockdown year. So we have this phenomena where actually some of the aggregate metrics of economic growth and economic employment participation can look good, but inequality can be increasing. And there have been, you know, a lot of press on this, and there have been some reports that have suggested there are things that need to be done to address this. But, I mean, what did you make of it all?
It makes grim reading every time those reports come round once a year, doesn't it? I mean, I guess for me, it's what do we do about it? What are the solutions? What are people suggesting, especially as we go into an election year when these things are likely, when solutions are going to make their way, or potential solutions are going to make their way into manifestos. So, you know, what are the kind of things that, for instance, are appearing in think tank reports that could be influential with either of the main parties? And I kind of, I did a perusal of the Joseph Rowntree Foundation's recent UK poverty report, some work from the Centre for Cities, various other think tanks that have looked at this and that are influential in framing the thinking of the major parties. And I guess for me, the solutions kind of, or the policy prescriptions kind of fall into one of four buckets, really. Firstly, strengthening the social safety net. So, you know, could you increase the minimum wage? Could you improve universal credit benefits, you know, ensuring that they keep pace with inflation? The second bucket would be supporting families with children, so ending the two-child limit for benefit payments, expanding access to affordable childcare, free school meals, potentially a new child poverty minister to act as a kind of focus within government. The third would be around addressing housing costs, so building more social housing, regulation of the private rental market, for instance, offering other forms of housing assistance outside what's currently available. And then the fourth bucket would be something that was probably a bit more popular with the pre-2010 Labour government, which was around investment in preventative measures, early programmes, early intervention programmes for vulnerable groups, particularly children and pensioners, low-income people from low-income backgrounds, that kind of thing. So I think the solutions that are sort of being bandied around the prescriptions probably fall into one or more of those four buckets. Are they workable? I think that if the fiscal context is the key to it, isn't it? Or most of those things, perhaps, with the exception of housing, building more of a social housing, are expensive things that would require investment upfront and potentially on a recurring basis, because we're talking about supporting incomes in many cases. So it's a mix of the what are you willing to prioritise in order to pay for it on the more structural stuff like housing. How does that tie into broader programmes of reform around the housing market?
Yeah, I mean, I think that isn't the key question that we in our profession and in our places need to answer is it possible to deliver higher growth and development and lower inequality concurrently? The two have to be connected. And I suppose there are two things that I would want to put into this conversation, both of which refer to previous episodes. The first is, a lot of our previous episodes, even in fact the one with Professor Philip McCann that's out this week, have suggested that Britain is outside the mainstream for being able to reconcile models of growth and development with models of social solidarity and lowering inequality. So that somehow or other we have to move from what people like Professor Danny Dorling last year called the sort of neoliberal North American or US type of model to more European and Scandinavian types of models of how we deliver change. So that's the first point. And then the second point I would say is that surely doing that reconciliation has to be more credible on a place basis than at the nation state level. Yes, the nation state must do the things that you mentioned about benefits reform or care reforms or indeed housing regime, housing finance, investment regimes and so on. But in terms of reconciling the tensions between growth and development and lowering inequalities, those are surely more amenable to place-based than national approaches, which takes us back to perhaps, I think it was last month's espresso shot on total place. So, A, getting back more into the mainstream of European and Scandinavian models of change, and B, allowing places to make at least some level of those choices seem to me to be critical to reconciling the two priorities of LED and placemaking.
And also to pick up a theme that we picked up in the Danny Dorling episode, some interventions just don't really work at any other level. So, we've spoken about before that there are certain types of interventions, like, for example, community development finance initiatives that work at their best when they're quite small and closely managed, rather than kind of really large and kind of impersonal. And they can be very effective at generating an impact for local communities. So as well as making trade-offs sometimes makes more sense at a more local level, some kinds of intervention need to be kept, on a community basis for them to be effective in addressing both inequality and lack of opportunity. So yeah, I think there's multiple dimensions here, isn't there? But I think that, there's an operational dimension, but there's also a governance dimension to this in terms of how you reconcile those differences.
Yeah, and I mean, I think this is another one that we could devote a whole episode to, and if we find the right guest, let's do that. But I mean, let's leave it there. I mean, these are annual figures. They don't show a good direction of travel, but actually to secure a change of direction, we clearly do need to find a way of reconciling growth and development with tackling inequality. It was ever thus.
Well, I hope our listeners enjoyed our quick look at the poverty in the UK and the statistics recently released around that, and some of the potential solutions, who knows, that may be offered ahead of the next general election. As always, you can connect with all things LED Confidential over at our website, ledconfidential.co.uk. Connect with our bonus material, tell us what you think. Send us your suggestions for future episodes. Till the next time.